This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Logbooks being preserved and digitized by Western Michigan University libraries offer a glimpse into the lives of lighthouse keepers in South Haven during the 1800s. We're going to talk about those handwritten logs with Sharon Carlson, the director of Western's Archives and Regional History Collections, Luann Morgan, Library Communications Coordinator, and Marianne Swieringa, who helped catalog the logbooks. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
How did you get the opportunity to examine these logbooks and go through them, figure out what's in there, and then the chance to digitize them? Sharon.
Well, we've had the logbooks for a number of years, and they came to us some years ago from the Van Buren County Historical Society. And there's always been a great deal of interest in these logbooks. In fact, at one time, we used the latest cutting-edge technology. We microfilmed them. And the microfilming was pretty bad, but the Maritime Museum in South Haven had a copy of the microfilm, and people have consulted the microfilm and the actual logbooks. About 10 years ago, we actually got another companion volume, and we haven't digitized that yet, but it's the log of wicks and oils, and that actually came from a descendant of the primary author of the Lighthouse logbooks.
So what goes into the process then of taking these logbooks and putting them in some sort of digital form so that then they're available online and people can view them later on? Luann?
We have a fairly well-equipped digitization center in Waldo Library, and they have the expertise along with the librarians to do high-resolution imaging of these double page spreads. They read all the way across from the left hand margin through the gutter all the way across to the right hand margin for each day. So it takes a large format camera to digitize these properly. And we have a high end Hasselblad camera that captures these at 50 megapixels each, which is about 400 DPI for those who are interested in the technology. It takes a lot of capacity to digitize these, and we use student workers in the Digitization Center to help accomplish that.
And a lot of time to go through it and get
it all done? A lot of hours.
So what are some things that we've learned from these logbooks that give us at least a little look into what someone was experiencing in a lighthouse at this time period between 1872 and 1880. Marianne?
Well, there's a lot of actually very beautiful description of the weather. And in fact, I have today's log from 135 years ago, which is, it's quite beautiful in how he describes the weather. He says it's rain and cloudy, wind moderate, southwest, the night dark, the lake middling rough, the weather chilly with a little fog on the lake. It's actually quite beautiful. He has a beautiful hand too in how he writes his words.
What are some other things that stand out to you in this collection that tell us a little bit about life at that time, and maybe a little bit about the lives of the life of a lighthouse keeper in this period, Sharon?
Well, I think it gives us a great deal of insight into his life and the life of his family. The primary keeper was Captain James Donahue, and he served as the keeper from about 1874 until about 1910. The logbooks don't go until 1910. But during that time, he was married twice. His first wife died, and that account is very briefly noted. He married a second time. He raised a family, and there are sometimes notations about his family. There are many notations about ships that are coming in, drownings, just commentary on lots of things related to South Haven. I think Marianne's comment about the weather is an important one because it was very important to his work as a lighthouse keeper. And now these logs have actually been looked at by some classes here at Western Michigan University who are investigating climate change. So the logs are a great insight into his family history, his work as a lighthouse keeper, but now they can also be explored and used for purposes that I don't think we even realized 20 or 30 years ago.
We can look at weather patterns and compare those from a time more than 100 years ago, and it's a snapshot perhaps, but one that might give a little clue as to the changes in the climate, perhaps later on.
Absolutely. And it's not uncommon. We have a number of diaries in the collection. I call them the farmer diaries. And any number of farmers in southwestern Michigan, and that's another profession, very much concerned about the weather. And a number of those diaries will start off with the weather conditions for the day. So I think, these have lots and lots of research implications, as well as just learning about life in South Haven during the 19th century.
You mentioned that Captain Donahue's first wife passed away. It's interesting the way this is noted in the logbook. July 3rd, 1875, rain and cloudy, wind moderate, lake smooth, the night dark, the weather warm. My wife died this afternoon at 4 p.m. of lung disease. It's strange to read that almost the way it comes off the pages as an afterthought. And then the next day is a foggy wind, the fog thick all day, the lake smooth, the night dark. I buried my wife today at 4 p.m. There's lots of different ways, I suppose, to read this, but do any of you want to share a thought or two about how that reads to you and what it might say about this this gentleman way back in 1875?
Well, to me, it reads that he is a man who is never off duty, that he is always a lighthouse keeper, and just like the weather, always on his mind, his family is always on his mind, and his job and his life, they're one.
And I suppose someone might say, well, gee, how come he put his wife second? The logbooks were not necessarily his diary. They were supposed to be about the job. It's another way of looking at it. Right, Sharon?
Absolutely. And actually, they were a record, kept for the United States government. And that is one of the aspects. A lot of these lighthouse logs are residing at the National Archives or branches of the National Archives. And, for whatever reason, we happen to have this one set. So it is very much an account of his work. Similarly, we can look at other documentation, and, he does remarry, and the notation where we learn that he's remarried is when his second wife actually gives birth, and he notes that another child has been born into the family.
Interesting. Is there a lot of kind of wading through rather mundane weather reports and days where not much happens in order to get to a little more juicy details about the life of the lighthouse keeper or things happening in South Haven? Is there a lot of things you read through which just kind of come across as another day in June of 1873, for example?
Well, I think a lot of the work is repetitive, and one of the things that we would like to do with this project at some point in the future is actually transcribe them. Right now, we presented digital images of the pages, and his hand is very, very easy to read. He's, he's not the worst 19th century handwriter I've seen, but that, I think, would make it easier ultimately for researchers. We've done some Civil War diaries and letters, and we do find that they are more readable and probably more usable. And at some point, we do hope that we could do this transcription work, and that may take people to the juicy details, so to speak.
Luann?
Sharon, in the past, when I've heard you talk about this, I like the way you described his approach to writing, where you've said it's especially rich compared to other lighthouse logbooks you've looked at. Do you still have that perspective?
I do, and I haven't looked at that many lighthouse logbooks, but I think because he is on this job for so many years, and he very much, his identity is as the keeper of the light, that he does put more emphasis into maybe some details that I haven't seen in other lighthouse logbooks, although I have seen on some genealogy websites, know, writings that if you have family who served as lighthouse keepers, that it is definitely worthwhile checking into those logbooks, because that may be the only personal type of record. I think how many of us would be just thrilled if we found out that, you know, a great-grandparent or a great-great-grandparent, you know, we could discover their letters or a diary they kept. And, you know, for many people, they didn't. And if they did, oftentimes they didn't survive.
Marianne?
I think it's worth noting, too, that each of these logbooks are hundreds of pages long. I don't think any of us have sat down and read, you know, all of these logs from cover to cover. So there's a lot of undiscovered information in here that we're hoping the researchers will then really dig in. And then, you know, they are so very rich with detail and names. And especially as a cataloger, it's the potential there is pretty exciting, because each one of these logs, a lot of times he'll name a schooner or a steamer or some barge that went down with all of its cargo, and or ships that lost three people. And you know, he'll actually, you know, name these vessels. And so each one of these things is, you know, I get a little cataloger's twitch of like, oh, I must record all of this. But so hopefully one day we'll be able to really get in there and start digging through these names. And I'm sure researchers will, they'll be all over that.
Is there something from a historian's perspective which is perhaps just a tad more valuable in finding a lighthouse keeper's logbook? Because lighthouse keepers now, we don't have them anymore, really. It would certainly be interesting to look through a physician's logbook in 1875, but we still have physicians. Medicine's changed, but we still have physicians. And I'm wondering if there's just a tad more historical value in examining the records of an occupation which we really don't have anymore in 2015.
Well, I think it gets at an occupation that really doesn't exist anymore. I think researchers studying history of business, commerce, they will find a great deal of information. I think even family and gender studies, because we know that from time to time, when he was unable to fulfill the duties of being the lighthouse keeper, he turned to his life partner and his wife, and she would occasionally fill in for him. His is just a very interesting story, too, in that people still continue to get governmental jobs because of their veteran status. He was a veteran. He was a veteran of the United States Civil War, and in fact, he had been seriously injured. He was an amputee, and so I don't know if in studying the history of people with disabilities and working through those disabilities, that there could be some valuable information there.
Yeah, it seemed like there had to be some challenges in doing that job as an amputee, that it would not have been, a lot of the things we have these days for people who with a disability did not exist in the 1870s. It would be interesting to know what sort of challenges he faced doing that job.
Yeah, and I don't know that the, you know, records really reveal that, but it certainly must have been difficult for him and, you know, for the types of prosthetic devices that existed at that time. I mean, he certainly used one, but just how it worked and how he worked. And yet he continued on in this role until 1910 and then actually still had a few years of retirement beyond that point.
Lou, I want to turn to you for just a moment on the whole process again of converting this to some sort of a digital format. Is there enough capacity out there to do all that you would want to do? I mean, I imagine there's a lot of records and a lot of logbooks out there. Is it a matter of choosing which ones you have time for and which ones maybe have the most historical content in them to decide which projects you take on?
Yes, it certainly is a matter of which ones are more unique, have more historic value, have more of an interest from various audiences because of the amount of time it takes to put this collection together. there's so many hours of digitizing the images, and then many more hours of putting the data together that would go with each image. And these are not just put up as images on the internet. They are combined through an image database software that elegantly unites all the data that Marianne, the metadata librarian, puts with each book and each page. And then how one can actually view the image depending on the computer you're using. You can zoom in to read the subtleties, zoom in to be sure what vowel that is that you're looking at, to decide for sure what word that is, as well as having the metadata right beside it within that collection, within that page. And the format itself, as you view it online, is what's called a page turner format. So you can click it and it actually moves the page across so you can look at the next spread just as though you had the book sitting there in front of you. So it's a really comprehensive presentation on the internet, and it's publicly available to anyone anywhere in the world in this format. And that's what makes it quite special for how comprehensive our Digitization Center can put this together, in that it is a very comprehensive image database collection of images and information. And then it's essentially published. Just a good number of years ago, one would publish this as a book. But now with the internet, the library itself is publishing this for all the world to use, whether you're a researcher or a casual historian or anywhere in between. So it makes it has a maximum usability that way.
Marianne?
A lot of recent technologies have really opened up researching archival materials to the world. You know, now these logbooks, which have been, you know, in the archives for a while, are now that we've photographed them, we put them into our Luna system, we've published them online in this excellent book reader format that really kind of gives you the feeling of flipping the pages yourself, but without having to drive to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and, you know, put on the white gloves and sit there. You can sit, you know, at your own computer and flip these pages and, you know, really zoom in. So it's opened the accessibility of these materials really to the world.
Sharon?
I'd just like to add that when we have selected items to digitize, we do look at the programs here at Western Michigan University, and we have a public history program, and sometimes students intern or work in maritime settings. We teach courses in Michigan history, and we also try to select items, though, that we know will be of interest to the public. And we know that there has been a great deal of interest in these logbooks. And so once we make a decision, we are really committed to it. And we will typically digitize in a file format that has some longevity, has some archival aspects. And then we continue to make the commitment to having backups of those files and also committing to migrating as time goes on, because I think all of us have had files on our computers, on floppy disk, if anybody has those anymore, where we've gone in, we've tried to open it up, and it no longer opens. And so we take great care in deciding what collections to digitize as a result.
But assuming all those steps are followed of backing up and migrating and all of that, at least in theory, the digital record is one that can live on somewhat longer than the standard paper record can, correct?
Under the best of circumstances, yes. But again, we've all had files that, you know, there are some problems with. They've deteriorated. They've become corrupt. And so we do save many copies in many places. And we also continue to take good care of the paper record as well, because the paper record, for those who can come in person, is valuable, and the experience of actually handling this as an artifact, when Luann described what these look like, it's a fairly large format that you read across the page, and you know, I've always found to actually be handling in a very careful way the item that was created 135, 150 years ago, depending on the record, to be a particularly thrilling experience.
Do you know of anything else out there, just looking ahead? Is there anybody else that's contacted you and said, hey, we've got more stuff. We've got other things you should take a look at. We've got another project that you should launch on. Anything good coming that you know of, Sharon?
Well, since we've moved into the new Charles C. and Lynn L. Zhang Legacy Collection Center, we've had many offers of additional materials, and as long as they fit in with our collecting policy and they can be used by the audience of Western Michigan University and the community, we are always interested. We have some ongoing digitization projects. Back in the late 80s, early 2000s, we conducted an oral history project for Western Centennial, and we are in the process of migrating cassette tapes to a digital format, and we'll be putting those online in the future, along with transcriptions that were completed.
Would those be like an audio format, like an MP3 or something, and people would have the chance to listen to it?
They will be in an audio format, so people will have the chance to listen to it, and we also will have the transcriptions, so that should help people identify what point in the interview maybe they're most interested in listening to, because a number of these interviews ranged from 30 minutes to 90 minutes, and some people who had made particular contributions, substantial contributions to the university, actually, number of hours of interview exist for some of those folks.
Sharon Carlson, Mary Ann Swieringa, and Luann Morgan, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.